Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you're a literalist, old sayings such as the cat has your tongue and straight from the horse's mouth probably get your goat. But do you even know what those old sayings are supposed to mean? Grammar Girl Mignon Fogarty has been devoting part of her Grammar Girl podcast and blog to the origins of old sayings. She joins us now. Mignon Fogarty, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me.
Fine. I couldn't help that. It's a horrible thing to do, laugh at my own joke. But, you know, the cat's got your tongue, loose as a goose, straight from the horse's mouth, off your feet. And Harbinger. What inspires you to pick those phrases? I want to talk about what they mean, but where do you get your ideas for phrases from right now?
Well, often they're just things I hear someone say. I'll either read it online or I'll hear someone in passing. Harbinger, for example, came up because, you know, I have guest writers on the Grammar Girl podcast now, mm-hmm. and Samantha Enslin's one of my writers, and she had used the word harbinger in a previous script that she wrote for me. And I looked at it and I said, harbinger, I can't imagine where we get that word. It didn't, in my mind, it didn't connect to any other English root. I just couldn't place it. So I started getting curious, and then I started researching it, which is the part of my job I love.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered that harbinger is related to the word for harbor, as in to shelter someone. And there was actually a position called the knight harbinger in England, and that person would go ahead of when the king and his party was traveling, the knight harbinger would go ahead and set up lodging and shelter for the, you know, royal procession before it would get into a town. And so the harbinger, you know, harbinger means, you know, a sign that something is coming. That's how we use it today.
Yeah.
But it was because the knight harbinger would go ahead and set up shelter for the king, so people in the town knew the king was coming. So I just thought it was so fascinating that it can go back to this royal position. And, you know, then I discovered there were all these other interesting positions, like keeper of the swan.
You're right.
That was somebody's job. So I just thought, I think it's so delightful. And when you start looking into the origin of all these English phrases, you often get to fascinating history like that.
I know you're not expert on other languages, but do other languages have sayings like that? Do you know?
Oh, gosh, I'm sure they do. I don't know off the top of my head.
You mentioned one about German, and I thought that was an interesting idiosyncrasy about German, where they just put two words together.
Right. It's a very flexible language in that you can make compound nouns. So, you know, when you think of German, you often think of long words if you start thinking about
yes.
it. They just, you know, stack together nouns to mean whatever they want something to mean. So, like Schadenfreude, you know, is one that.
What are the two words what are they compounding there?
I was just trying to, I said it and then I can't remember. I think it means something like, I know it means taking pleasure in someone else's misfortune. I can't remember. I think
the actual words.
I think that might be shame. But
and then you were also talking about another phrase that's out there that there's no way I can pronounce it, but it has to do with being depressed over the news.
So I actually did take German in high school, so I can pronounce this. It's Weltschmerz Twittersucht. And about a year ago, I found that I was just doing nothing but reading my Twitter feed and being depressed about the news. And I finally asked my Twitter friends, you know, is there a long German word for being so shocked and depressed by current events that you can't pull yourself away from Twitter? And people suggested lots of options, but my favorite came from Stan Carey, who's another writer about language. And the word he came up with was Weltschmerz Twittersucht, and it means Weltschmerz means world weariness, and let's see, Twitter obviously means Twitter, and then Sucht means addiction. So world weariness, Twitter addiction. So that is something that I suffer from, and maybe we all need a support group.
The cat's got your tongue is one of those phrases that sort of can't be a good explanation. It's not going to be something warm and fuzzy.
No, no. So one story is that in ancient Egypt, the punishment for lying or blaspheming was to have your tongue cut out and then fed to cats. So, you know, the cat got your tongue like that. It sounds, we say it playfully today, but, you know, it wasn't a good thing in ancient Egypt.
And another one, have you looked up penny for your thoughts?
No, I haven't. There are so many. There are whole books of these things, and they often do go back to just some interesting quirk of history or some ancient practice. I don't know where penny for your thoughts comes from.
So if anybody out there has an idea and wants to share the origins of a familiar phrase, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Loose as a goose, I thought was interesting because there were a lot of different takes on that, and they all go back, well, they don't all. I think the one I believe the most doesn't go back to the storybook stuff at all, but one of the favorite origins goes back to three children's stories.
Right. Well, first, what's the one you believe?
The goose has loose bowels.
Oh, right. Well, they do all kind of go back to that.
Okay.
Yeah. So loose as a goose comes from the idea that, you know, from on the farm, people would know that a goose has loose bowels. But, you know, loose as a goose, it rhymes, right? And a lot of children's books use rhymes because that rhymes really resonate with children, especially as they're learning language. We talked about that a week or two ago in my podcast. Mm-hmm. And when I was researching loose as a goose, which is how I tell people to remember the difference in spelling between loose and lose, people often get confused about those two spellings. So think of the phrase loose as a goose because both of those words have two O's. So think of mm-hmm. them as the big eyes of the goose. But getting back to where we get the phrase, I think it goes back to Chicken Little. So if you remember the children's story Chicken Little, where the sky is falling, that children's story, most of the characters in that story had names that rhymed. There was Henny Penny and Ducky Lucky mm-hmm. and Foxy Loxy. And Chicken Little was even sometimes called Chicken Lickin'. So, but there was also Goose Loose. And so I think that Goose Loose probably led to Goosey Lucy, you know, and we often also add EY just, you know, for fun to make it sound cute for kids. So Goosey Lucy, you know, I think led to Loose as a Goose, which also overlapped with the idea that geese have loose bowels. So it all sort of goes back to the farm, but also those children's stories.
Straight from the horse's mouth. I knew this because I hung around horses a lot when I was a kid and it was passed on to me, but that is one that a lot of people don't know.
Yeah, I didn't know this one before I started researching it. And it turns out that, why don't you say, because since you know from...
Well, because a horse's mouth is a particularly accurate way to determine the age of a horse because of the wear and tear on the teeth. It's like almost like reading the rings on a tree trunk. It's pretty accurate.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it is amazing. It's really interesting.
Do you know how close you can get in age? Is it within a year? Or?
My recollection was within a couple of years. It's like a decade thing.
That's amazing. Yeah. So I know that there's something called a dental star that appears.
Yeah.
It starts to wear down. It's a darker part of the tooth. And so by a certain age, you can see the dental star on a horse's teeth. So, you know, when you're getting something straight from the horse's mouth, it's a way of saying that what you know is accurate in the way that telling a horse's age would be accurate by looking at its mouth.
But now we just think, you know, your example was if you hear gossip, you know, you say, well, I want to hear it straight from the horse's mouth, meaning not the source of the gossip, but the person the gossip's about.
Right, exactly. You want to go straight to the source
right. Instead
of straight to the tooth.
Straight to the tooth. This, I don't think of this as a phrase, but you addressed the issue of badminton versus badminton. And I have to admit, I didn't know that. That was new to me. Tell.
Right.
Do tell.
I had been saying badminton wrong my whole life. So it is pronounced badminton with an N. I had been saying badminton, like mittens that you wear on your hands.
That's right.
How I always heard it. But it turns out professional badminton players don't like that. It's not how you say it. So badminton is named after a place, an estate called Badminton House in England. And this house, this estate, is the first place that the game was believed to be played in England. And the story is that there were children in the house, and for some reason, I think maybe because of bad weather, they had to play indoors. And the adults were worried that they would damage things in the house, like the paint. They were afraid they would damage the paintings on the wall. And so they made the light shuttlecock, the thing you use to play badminton, for the children to play with, because if you think about when you're playing badminton, it's light, you can throw it far, but it doesn't hit anything very hard, so you're not going to damage anything in the house playing badminton. So that's the idea, is that it was it wasn't invented in England. Some people think it was invented there, but it was actually played for hundreds of years. A game like that was played in Europe and India and China. So it wasn't invented, but that was the first place it was played in England.
When you pronounce badminton correctly, does anyone ever correct you?
Well, I've never had occasion to say it after I learned how to say it right.
Yeah.
And I don't remember ever having been corrected. And you can probably tell when I say it, I have to make a conscious effort to pronounce that N. I think just the way that, I'm sure a linguist would have a better idea of this, but I think the way we pronounce words, it's probably really easy to drop that N. It's a little hard to say, so it probably, as language pronunciation often changes because things are hard to say, and so we end up saying them easier way.
I don't know if you remember, we've talked about this before, but, my frustration with the word fort, as in F-O-R-T-E,
right,
and that the original pronunciation is fort, but unless you're using it in musical terms, which means then it's forte, but everybody says forte now. I know what I don't say it anymore, because for one thing, I would keep getting corrected. And now, as you've pointed out, it's now appropriate to say either, but most people say forte because it's what's understood.
Right. It's Brian Garner, who wrote Garner's Modern American Usage and Garner's Modern English Usage, calls certain words skunked because you just can't win.
Yeah.
Right? And I think forte is one of those words, because I would bet that 90% of people think it's pronounced forte. That's my forte.
Or that was the way it was supposed to be.
Right, but you're right. Technically, the correct pronunciation is fort. And so no matter how you say it, somebody is going to think you're wrong. If you say it the supposedly right way, most people are going to think you're wrong, and you just can't win. So that's a term that I think, I don't know for sure that he calls that particular word skunked, but I bet he does, because it definitely falls into that category.
We're talking about old words, old sayings, and whatnot with my guest, Mignon Fogarty. She's author and host of the Grammar Girl podcast. If you have a question or comment about old sayings, grammar issues, we are going to get to the Oxford comma ASAP. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the ups and downs and changes of the English language. My guest is author and host of the Grammar Girl podcast, Mignon Fogarty. If you have a question about old sayings for Mignon, a question about grammar, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Marjorie in Delaware, you had more horse-related grammar questions. Welcome.
Well, when you were talking about the hearing things straight from the horse's mouth, I was just wondering if that's related to the saying of don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Because my parents said that a lot to me, especially every birthday and Christmas, whenever I would be like, oh, you know,
I didn't get
cool.
what I wanted. Yeah.
Yeah. They would just be like, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. So I was just wondering if those two things are related.
Minya.
Oh, that's a great question. I'm trying to remember. I don't know off the top of my head.
It sounds like it would be like if someone gives you a horse, you don't look in the mouth to see what kind of shape it's in. You take the horse.
Right. I kind of think it is. That does sound right to me. I know I used to know this.
Yeah. It's what about another? It made me think of that. Another one from, I think of it, associated with Dorothy, Toto.
There's no place like home?
Well, no, they're going to Emerald City, and he says, well, now that's a horse of a different color.
Oh.
A horse of a different color. I wonder where that comes from.
Yeah.
Are you jotting all these down, Minya?
I am, actually.
Okay. All right. All right. Good. Marjorie, thanks a lot for your call.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Kind of related to horses in a way, off your feed, which I use quite a bit. That's a good one. Minya?
Right. That's interesting because I had never heard it before, and we covered it in the podcast a few weeks ago, and I've had listeners say, I never heard that before. But
really?
I think it's common, you know, it's more common in areas. Again, there's a lot of farming.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you can call some, you can say someone is off their feed to just say they're out, you know, they're acting out of sorts. Mm-hmm. They're not quite right anymore. And it relates to animals, you know, not eating their feed. It's quite literal, you know, if a horse is off its feed, it's not eating. And so then you worry about it and you wonder if something's wrong and it might be sick or it's certainly, you know, not in a good way. So, you know, when you just go, you can describe a person as, you know, oh, she's off her feed, is, you know, she's having a bad day. But it relates to animals not eating their feed.
And you had kind of a sad story to tell.
Right. So it, yeah, you can find the phrase in the famous British explorer, Captain Scott, who in the early 1900s went to the South Pole. So he brought along sled dogs and ponies, you know, to carry all the equipment that his group needed. And in his diary, he would often mention that the animals were off their feed. So a pig he described as being off its feed, and the ponies he described as being off their feed. And they were really worried because, you know, they needed these animals to make their expedition. The ponies did recover, but the group, the Scott group, they died on the expedition. All of them died, and so they found this in his diary that they found with his body eventually. So it was quite sad.
Yeah. 614-292-8513 is the number to call. Nancy in Westerville, you're on the air.
Hi, Anne.
Hi, Nancy.
One of our trips to England, we learned that when the convicted person was headed to the gallows, they would have to walk to the gallows, and oftentimes their legs were real wobbly and they couldn't make it. So they would give them a drink, and so before they would head down the road to the gallows. So that's when the expression "one for the road" came up.
Oh, that's fascinating.
So that's my contribution for the day.
Thank you very much, Nancy.
I love that.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Are there any particularly Minyan Fogarty, any particularly Americanized kind of American expressions? It seems like a lot of these come from, you know, beyond, you know, older than that. They're older.
Right. I can't think of any off the top of my head that are specifically American. One that I did recently learn that I thought was fascinating, if any of your listeners listened to the S-Town podcast that was very popular a month or two ago.
Right.
They talked about where we got the phrase "mad as a hatter." So, and I had never known this, but hatters used mercury with their hat felt. So hatters often got mercury poisoning, which made them seem, you know, mad, crazy. So they were irritable and they had tremors and they just appeared, you know, like they had mental problems. So mm-hmm. to say someone is mad as a hatter goes back, it goes back to Britain, but where all the hatters, a lot of the hatters had mercury poisoning, so it made sense to say someone was mad as a hatter.
But it got all conflated with the Alice in Wonderland thing.
Exactly, right. Yeah, so you just always think of the hatter.
Which was a rabbit.
Right, yeah, but...
No, it's not a rabbit. It's the hatter's the tea party.
I just keep thinking of Johnny Depp.
I do too. I can't get Johnny Depp out of my mind now. Oh, no. All right, speaking of rabbits, there's Judy in Columbus. Hi, Judy.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
My grandfather, an old country doctor, used to use the expression, "You're right as two rabbits." I never understood it, never heard it before, never heard it since, and I'm just wondering if your guest has ever heard of it or if it's something he made up. But I find that kind of hard to believe.
Something that he made up, you're saying, would be hard to believe.
Yeah.
Can you say that again? I didn't.
Right as two rabbits.
Right.
And he would say it often, you know, I mean, when appropriate, he would say it often. Mm-hmm. So I'm just so curious.
I have never heard that before.
I've never heard it before, but I have a guess.
Yeah?
Really?
You know, two rabbits are going to breed. I mean, they're going to... There's like the thing about rabbits, you know, they breed like
rabbits.
Well, yeah,
right.
Yeah, right. We think of them as being very prolific, you know, in the breeding department.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I had three children with my grandfather around, and I don't know why he would be referring to that, but I just, it could have been anything that you said. If you said, you know, one time I said, "Grandpa, can you imagine you've been around through the horse and buggy age and also to see a man circle the earth? How about that?" And you say, you're right as two rabbits. Like, my statement was correct.
Wow. So he kind of used it as a state of being and also as an accurate, you're accurate.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes, that's what I recall. Yeah. But you've never heard of it. So I guess
no.
And I would go down in the mystery book.
No, well, I
was trying to quickly search for an answer, and I'm not getting anything on Google either. So it may be that he made it up.
That would be kind of cool. Judy, thanks a lot for that call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about old sayings with Mignon Fogarty, author and host of the Grammar Girl podcast. If you have a question or comment about grammar, you can also ask 614-292-8513. Gosh, there's all kinds of stuff here.
It does look like a horse of another color originally comes from Shakespeare.
Oh.
So Shakespeare wrote about, quote, a horse of that color in Twelfth Night. And it looks like the phrase comes from that.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. Interesting. Anita in Columbus, you're on the air with Mignon Fogarty. Hi, Anita.
Hi there. I was calling about... phrase that I had learned from a friend of mine who I don't know how he came across it. It's from the turn of the other century that we did not live through, and it basically refers to someone who is a sort of a pansy or a sensitive person or, you know, just easily, you know, hurt feelings. And the phrase is, "What were you reborn with, a paper posterior, and it ends in hole."
Oh.
We don't want to say it on the air.
No, we can't say it on the air. That's against some kind of law,
right,
or something. But
I understand that because it doesn't refer to the animal, and it refers graphically
to a human body part.
Right.
All right. Interesting. What were you born with, a paper blank hole? Interesting. All right.
Has she ever heard of
that? Have you heard of that?
I have never heard that before either.
I haven't either.
I think a lot of these might be regional too.
Yeah.
So people in different parts of the country, people have different sayings.
But don't you want to know the origin of stuff like that?
I do.
Wow. Okay. Thanks, Anita, for that. And Alan in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Alan.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Thanks for having me. I was saying I didn't want to lead the conversation down a vulgar path as well, but I always wondered what the origin of Screw the Pooch was.
Have you heard of that one?
I have heard of that one.
Yeah.
I don't know off the top of my head what the origin is.
Yeah, that's kind of a good question, though, Alan. Where do those things come from? Might be regional too. I know Minyan will be busily checking these things out. So, Alan, thanks a lot for that call. Let's see. We've got all the ones that you've talked about so far, but what is the most surprising origin story of a phrase for you, Minyan?
Oh, gosh. I guess one that jumped out at me as being surprising because it was so literal is going back, and this is actually American, so you were asking about an American one earlier, yeah. Is that when the pilgrims came over and when they negotiated peace treaties with the Native Americans,
oh, yeah.
the way they sort of commemorated that, I have heard, is by burying all their weapons, including hatchets and knives. And so I have heard that that is where we get the phrase, bury the hatchet.
And that's from the Indians.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're literally burying, for a peace treaty, when you bury the hatchet with someone, you're sort of letting bygones be bygones. You're forgiving them. You're forming peace between the two of you, so to bury, but like they literally buried the hatchet, the Native Americans when they made a peace treaty. So I thought that was really surprising that I didn't think it would be so literal.
Right, exactly. But we don't think of it literally anymore. We've got an email from Marianne, and I'm not sure. She writes, "I love the phrase, and Bob's your uncle, and I find that I use it often. But who is Bob?"
Yeah.
What is that? It's supposed to mean like, and there you have it.
Right. And I've heard that.
I've never heard that before.
It's British. So in England, they often say, and it does mean, so there you go. You'll be telling a long story. And they say, whereas an American might say, so there you go. In Britain, they would say, so Bob's your uncle. And yeah, it's the funniest thing. And I'm trying to remember why they say that.
That is so strange.
Who's Bob?
And what cracks me up is Marianne uses it all the time, but who's Bob? I mean, you're so funny, Marianne. I think that's great. Bob in Columbus, welcome to the show.
Good morning. I have a couple of, one is a skunked word and another a skunked phrase.
Okay.
The word is decimate.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about that before, right?
Right. So decimate comes from the practice, I think the Roman army, if I remember right, would...
Or the Spartans or something like that, yeah.
Would punish the troops by making them draw lots and then they would make the... So it decimate comes... It means 10. So it's related to the word for 10. So the Roman army, they would kill 10% of their troops as punishment, and they would make them draw lots. And so the 90% who were lucky and drew the lucky lots would have to kill the 10% of the troops who drew the bad lots. And so decimate originally meant to kill 10% of the troops. And so a lot of people think that decimate should still be limited to meaning losing 10% of something, but the meaning has sort of evolved so that people would say, the city was decimated by the hurricane,
mm-hmm.
Which has no sense of 10% at all.
Right.
And so, you know, it's sort of skunked because some people think that you shouldn't use it that way and that it should only be limited, limited to describing 10% destruction.
Yeah, but who does that, you know?
Right. I would actually argue that it's not skunked, that it has just taken on this new, broader meaning. Because when would you ever really use it in a way? Like, it's almost a useless word if you limit it to being to that description of losing 10% of something. Like, we almost never have a chance to talk about that.
And then I think there's also another sort of devastating aspect to the idea of decimating in its original use. It's kind of horrible to think about having, you know, to me it would be a very destructive force, even if you killed half or 10%, if you had the other 90% doing the job.
It would be very demoralizing.
Yeah, right, exactly. Let's see. Bob, thanks a lot for that. This is a good one. Christina in Dublin, you're on the air. Hi, Christina.
Hi, yeah, I see you're laughing. So my father, my whole life has said Heaven's to Murgatroyd, and I believe it's from Hanna-Barbera's Snagglepuss's character says it, but where did it come from before that?
Yeah.
Right, yeah, it immediately makes me think of cartoons I watched as a child.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it looks like it's a variant, you know, Heaven's to Betsy was a phrase.
What's Murgatroyd?
But Murgatroyd, I think they just made it up. I'm nearly certain that the writers just made it up. And, you know, it's a pretty funny word, Murgatroyd. Yeah. I had a comedian come on my show many years ago and talk about words that are inherently funny. And he said, I used the characters Squiggly and Aardvark in example sentences in my podcast. And he said that their names are just inherently funny because K's and G's make word, for some reason, we laugh at words that have K's and G's in them, and Murgatroyd has that G in the middle. So I think the writers just thought it was funny.
Christina, good. Ooh. That's good. Thanks.
You're welcome.
That's Christina. We are going to take a quick break. We'll get to your calls. My guest is Mignon Fogarty, author and host of the Grammar Girl podcast. We're having a lot of fun today talking about old phases. It's kind of funny. Yeah. And my producer's having a blast giving me explanations for things over here. My guest, once again, Mignon Fogarty. If you have an old saying you want maybe some explanation or at least to have a chuckle over, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the English language, in particular, old sayings in the English language. My guest is author and host of Grammar Girl podcast, Mignon Fogarty. And Michael DeBonis, my producer, looked up the issue, Heavens to Murgatroyd, and it was popularized by the cartoon character Snagglepuss, a regular on the Yogi Bear show in the 1960s, and it is a variant of the earlier Heavens to Betsy. So, and Fred has an answer to the right is two rabbits thing. Let's see what Fred has to say. Fred, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Well, you know, watching a lot of public TV, you learn about woodworking.
Yeah.
And the word rabbit, spelled R-A-B-B-E-T, is kind of a technique for joining two pieces of wood.
Yeah.
And I think if you have two rabbits, I think they join correctly.
Ah.
That's my guess.
That's really interesting.
That is fascinating. That makes so much sense. They join together properly.
Yeah.
And that's why I couldn't find anything, because rabbits is spelled differently.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Fred. We've got more horse-related grammar from Jesse. Hi, Jesse. You're on the air.
Hi. I just had a question about a pretty commonly known phrase. Basically, when you want to excuse yourself without giving much information, people say, I got to go see a guy about a horse. And
that's right.
I was wondering about, like, what the origin of that phrase is and why going to go see a guy about a horse is even used in context. Yeah.
With maybe going to the restroom. Right. Wow. Maybe I'm Fogarty?
Right. Yeah, I'm seeing that people also used to say, I've got to see a man about a dog.
Oh, really?
It looks like it goes back quite far. In the mid-1800s, people were saying it. But I'm not seeing any reason for why people would actually say that, where it comes from. I was looking up Screw the Pooch for the break. And it looks like that was popularized by The Right Stuff in 1983. So they set it on the NASA mission. And then there are you know, more polite ways. So people will, instead of saying that, they'll say he fed the dog or he walked the dog. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But it was popularized by The Right Stuff.
All right. Well, let's see, where am I? Okay, thanks a lot for that call, Jesse. And we now know at least the modern origins of Screw the Pooch. Email from Evan. I was wondering about the origin of Speak of the Devil, used colloquially when somebody you are talking about walks in the room. Who had the devil walk in?
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah, it is.
My guess would be that it's biblical. There's probably a biblical phrase, but I don't know off the top of my head. I just don't know. There are just tens of thousands of these interesting old sayings, and it's so fun to see where they come from. But off the top of my head, I don't know a lot of them.
Okay. Let's see. Will in Columbus, you want to talk about grammar? Hi, Will. Hello, Will.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
Hey, and great show.
Thanks.
I'm a longtime listener and a great fan. I tend to be kind of a traditionalist, and I knew that you were going to talk somewhat today about the Oxford comma.
That's right.
And basically what I wanted to, you know, share was an application that pretty much sealed the deal for me a long time ago, and that was a story about four siblings, Bob, Carol, Ted, and Alice. Their last surviving parent, their mother, had passed away. So they were having some issues in settling up the estate. So it went into probate, and the probate court read the will, which stated that I would like to have my estate split in equal portions to my children, Bob, Carol, Ted, and Alice. And so basically the story goes is that the estate was split into thirds, a third for Bob, a third for Carol, and a third for Ted and Alice. And basically the point is that if the Oxford comma had been used properly in the will, then all four would have got four equal shares of one quarter instead of Ted and Alice getting a sixth each of the estate. And my final point on that is that the Oxford comma is the use of the Oxford comma is free of charge. So why don't we do it?
Yeah, Mignon, there's been a recent legal case on this issue.
Right. The Oxford comma is, the Associated Press says the Oxford comma should only be included when you need it for clarity. But when you're writing laws or a will or a legal document, you always want the most clarity you can possibly get.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes up, you know, more than in that one case, the comma does come up in legal cases. So a few months ago, there was a dairy that had a labor dispute with its workers that hinged on an Oxford comma. That Oxford comma is if you have red comma, white comma, and blue, the Oxford comma is that comma before the and, before the final element in a series. So it shows distinctively that that last element is separate. Some dairy workers won a $10 million case a few months ago because there was no Oxford comma in a law that talked about when, I think it was when they were required to get overtime pay.
Mm-hmm.
And so the law said that exemptions from pay included when workers were canning, processing, freezing, drying, marketing, storing, packing for shipment or distribution of a variety of products. And so there was no comma after packing for shipment. And so the workers argued that packing for shipment or distribution was one thing. And so because the dairy drivers did distribute perishable goods, they said that that mattered. So the missing Oxford comma in the law led to the workers winning a $10 million ruling in, I think it was overtime pay that they were supposed to get.
You're right. That's real money.
Real money for an Oxford comma.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm a fan of the Oxford comma. I think it's easier to just always put it in than try to look at your sentence and decide whether it's needed for clarity or maybe it's fine without it. I just always put it in. It just it's easier. It makes more sense. Chicago style, the Chicago Manual of Style, does recommend using the Oxford comma all the time. And that's one thing I find a lot when I'm talking to people is that many people were taught one way or the other in school. People are often taught either always use the Oxford comma or never use the Oxford comma. And then they go through life thinking everyone else is doing it wrong and getting annoyed. And it just turns out it's a style choice. It just depends on which style you follow.
But there is a purpose to it.
There's a purpose. There's clarity. And it can have massive implications in laws and other kinds of legal documents.
Right.
So, but it's not wrong to leave it out stylistically. It's not grammatically incorrect, but it can lead to misunderstandings.
All right. Will, thanks for that. I want to turn now to Gloria in Columbus. Hi, Gloria.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I was questioning a comment that President Trump made the other day when he said the Russians were laughing up their sleeves. What does that mean?
Oh, I have heard that, but not very often. I think it would have to mean laughing clandestinely.
Yeah.
You know, I would imagine you put your arm up and sort of hide your mouth so someone doesn't see that you're laughing at them.
Right.
So it's sort of a secret clandestine laugh.
I'm going to turn to Richard in Upper Arlington now. Thanks a lot for that call. Richard, you're on the air. Richard? Can't seem
to get him. Waiting.
Yeah.
Laughing up your sleeve made me think of another phrase that I've only heard maybe in the last 10 years, but it's called the vampire cough. So you know how we teach children not to cough into their hands anymore because it spreads germs?
Right.
So we teach them to sort of cough into the inside of the elbow, and then it's become called the vampire cough because you're raising your arm sort of like vampires did in old movies to raise up their cape. So I've always thought that was funny, the vampire cough.
Yeah, I like that too. Richard in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I heard the expression mad as a hatter described, and
right.
it brought something to my mind. One of my relatives on my mother's side was a hatter from Boston. His name was Boston Corbett, and he led a very colorful life, including was the man that helped track down John Wilkes Booth and shot him in the burning barn.
Wow.
And so that brings up another expression, your name is Mud. That was the doctor that set John Wilkes Booth's leg in the countryside, and he was I think he got his medical license removed and
because he saved the man who shot Lincoln. Interesting.
Well, no because he saved
Yeah, that's interesting. Thank you, Richard. I want to get to as many of these other calls as I can. Dave in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, hi. How you doing, Ann?
Good.
I was in the military for a long time, and we had a lot of things, but one of those was three bags full, sir. And I think that was just a, you know, can do, we'll get it done, but I never really understood the origins of that.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
The origin of the phrase three bags full, it's a military saying, but I remember from black sheep, black sheep. Have you any wool? Yes, or three bags full. So I wonder. I'm wondering about that. Any thoughts about that? It sounds British,
right?
Minyan.
Yeah, I think of the children's song too, but I wonder it might have something to do with food, maybe. I'm just wondering if it would be, you know, if three bags full would maybe be three meals.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
Maybe a bag lunch. I'm not sure though.
Yeah.
Really, all I know.
But it's a military saying. Dave was saying is something in the military, like yes,
right.
Sir, three bags full. That's
right.
Interesting. That's I'm going to check that one out. And then Sarah in Dublin, you're on the air. Hi, Sarah.
Yeah. Hi there.
Go ahead.
When I was growing up, my dad, whenever something really exciting would happen, he'd say, "How's that for the price of beans?" And as I've gotten older, nobody has ever heard of that. So I was just wondering if there's an actual meaning or if he just came up with that.
Again, I haven't heard that one. I think of beans as being affordable. So, you know, it would be a way of describing something that was cheap or a good deal. All that for a bag of beans, the price of beans.
Right.
You know, just maybe, I don't know. I wonder if during the war, beans were some of the food that was, you know, still available during rationing.
Mm-hmm.
That could make sense. But really, I'm just guessing.
And I'm also thinking about, sometimes I say, well, what does that have to do with the price of tea in China?
Right.
Right. Yeah.
That, and I'm thinking I might say that about beans. What do I have to do with the price of beans? Interesting. Yeah. Thank you, Sarah, for that. Mostly,
yeah,
it's just really interesting to hear all these sayings. And Bob in Clintonville, we have time for one more. Bob, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
My question is about the saying, "It's hotter than Katie be damned."
I haven't heard that one either.
Yeah, I could look it up on Google or whatever, and I've never heard. I've only heard it saying, you know, the older people say it.
I wonder if it has something to do with being in hell or something.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's what it is.
But who is Katie?
Yeah, but who's Katie? Who's poor Katie?
Yeah,
how'd she get damned?
That's what I was wondering, yeah.
Right.
Another one of my faves, of course, is "It Can't Dance and It's Too Wet to Plow."
I'm also seeing versions that are hotter than Billy Be Damned. So Billy and Katie somewhere are in deep trouble.
These poor people. Bob in Clintonville, thanks a lot for that question. There is a note about "speak of the devil" that it's for a short form of the superstitious idiom "speak of the devil and he doth appear."
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So when we were talking about Evan asking where about the origin of "speak of the devil" when somebody walks into a room, "speak of the devil and he doth appear." In other words, don't speak of the devil. Does that
right.
make sense, Mignon?
Right. Oh,
okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I just wonder if it's
biblical,
biblical, once again. You know, it could be Shakespeare, too. A lot
yeah.
of many, many common phrases come from Shakespeare.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to continue along this road? Have we given you any good ideas?
Yes, I love having these phrases. I call them tidbits in my podcast. And
uh-huh.
I just think they're fascinating, and they do. They so often lead to interesting history. I know we have a few that have come from card games, and there are so many about horses and things from the farm. You know, they lead you to thinking about the way life was lived in the past, and
uh-huh.
I find that fascinating.
Exactly. Well, Mignon Fogarty, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great having you back again.
Thank you.
That's Mignon Fogarty, author and host of the Grammar Girl podcast. We'll have a link to that on our website. Thank you so much for all your great ideas and questions today. Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, assistant producer Shyla Knott, All Sides interns Kelly Rudolph, Kyle McKinnon, Aaron Kinkley, and Owen Doherty, and also the guy at the board, Charlie Picker. Thank you so much, Charlie, for helping us out this week with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrola, and Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Thanks a lot for listening. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.